Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
Today we have WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert. Kathy and Debbie get into stories of when she first fell in love with the game, playing in the backyard with her five brothers and listening to stories of when her father, who played for Coach Jack Ramsey at St. Joe's and was later drafted by the Pistons. She also talks about her time playing in college at Lehigh for then Coach Muffet McGraw. A couple of great stories there. Talks about being the commissioner in her first year on the job. She had to deal with a pandemic, getting everything situated in the wobble. The social justice activism of the players, and a collective bargaining agreement. But she lives by the motto of turning challenges into opportunities. She also gets into what's next for the WNBA, using momentum from last season, building rivalries, turning players into household names, building off the momentum of Mark Davis, the owner of the Oakland Raiders, who just bought the Las Vegas Aces, and how big that is for the brand and for the league. She talks about sports betting and gambling and the attention drawing that it does for the league, the corporate partnership leverages that they're able to do from that, and some digital things that are coming with second screen experience and more on the digital marketing side. This was a great episode, and I hope you all enjoy. If you're a fan of WNBA like I am, I know that you will. And please continue to listen and enjoy as we get another great episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli.
Man, I'll tell you what, I think I got a busy schedule. And then I look at Kathy Engelbert, the commissioner of the WNBA, and I think, man, never a day off. Right, commissioner?
Yeah, no, we're cruising along, getting ready for the tip of our 25th anniversary season. So we're very, really excited.
I love what I know about your story and your passion for the game. Obviously, we know what a great leader you are with the corporate and executive positions you've held leading into the WNBA. But I want to know where you first fell in love with the game.
Well, yeah. So, Debbie, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. But basketball, like, it's so much in my DNA. Growing up, my father played for Jack Ramsey, Dr. Jack, at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. And we had like this trophy room where all these accolades of my father having played for a St. Joe's program that was like in the top 10 in the country. And then he was drafted by the Detroit Pistons in 1957. I think they were the Fort Wayne Pistons way back then. And, you know, so my love of the game came from my father. I grew up with, you know, seven siblings, five brothers. We played endless basketball in the backyard. We had this like decrepit wooden backboard, and my dad would have to change the net all the time, and the rim would be bent because the boys would, you know, play around with it. But I was always the fourth because I had three older brothers, and I was their fourth out there. So that's where it came. And as you know, I played in college, and probably apropos back when my daughter Julia was in fifth grade, she's 23 now, I took her to her travel basketball tryout. We were like new in the town. I didn't really know anybody. And some guy comes up and hands me a clipboard with all the players' names on it. And he says, you play Division I basketball? I said, yeah. He goes, you're running the tryout and you're going to be the coach of the team. And I literally had jeans and Uggs on. But I went on to coach her team for the next 4 years and happily retired when she went on to high school. So the basketball thing stuck with me throughout my business career. So when I heard about the WNBA job, I was like, yeah, this is a passion of mine.
I'm curious about the trophy case. Like, did anything that you accomplish ever make it to the top shelf, or was that all your grandpa?
No, all my father, with Big Five Hall of Fame, St. Joe's Hall of Fame, you know, very accomplished. But he was, and he played baseball then too. So back then, a lot of athletes played more than one sport, and I actually played two sports at Lehigh. I didn't play one, so I followed in that footstep for sure.
So you bring up Lehigh. So we all know your connection to Muffet McGraw. I would like to know Muffet as a young coach, you know, when you were a player, what was it like? What did you fall back on thinking? You know, I heard Muffet say that, or remember, you know, like your old mom would go, you know, you know, if you guys keep playing ball in the house, somebody's going to get hurt. You know, there's something that coaches say that must have resonated with you.
Well, I mean, to set the stage, I was recruited to Lehigh to play lacrosse. And then heard about a basketball tryout, and I had been a pretty accomplished high school player in Southern New Jersey, right across the bridge from Philly. So, and that year I heard the women's basketball coach was brand new and hadn't recruited any of the incoming freshmen. And that coach was Muffet McGraw. So, and I was like a pretty shy college freshman, but sports was always a place where I could gain confidence. And I can't say enough about Coach McGraw, like the confidence I gained, the decision-making skills I learned from those 4 years. From her. She went on to become obviously a giant in the game of women's basketball at Notre Dame, but she coached and mentored thousands of young basketball players. So, you know, we've been a big beneficiary of that in the WNBA. You know, Rika Ngumbo Ali, who led the league in scoring last year, Jewel Lloyd, who had a great year for the WNBA champion Storm, Jackie Young on Vegas, Steph Dolson with Chicago, and so on. And so, I mean, think about that. And funny enough, I found out after college that Muffet almost cut me from the team at Lehigh as a freshman, you know, because she didn't know who I was and I just showed up. And so, you know, she was just always had confidence in me, always was looking, you know, and who knew I would go on to be a leader, but she was always looking for someone to step up and lead. And I became the point guard my sophomore year. And she's like, you're the leader now. So I think her, you know, constantly wanting to find leaders to lead an offense, lead the team on and off the court, by the way, too, was such a special part of Muffet.
So we brought up her name. So Expect More is her book. I'm wondering if you've had one on your shelf yet. Have you read it? Has she sent you one? You know, and Expect More sounds like something that you might have learned from her.
Oh, definitely. And I need to get that book. So I'll go on Amazon and order it today. But you know, it definitely always expected more. Anybody who was coached by her knows, or competed against her from another team knows how she always expected more. She never gave up. You know, Lehigh, like before she got there, was, you know, a program in disarray. I think they had 4 or 5 wins the year before. By my senior year, we were 24-4. So she expected more, and I can't wait to read the book.
Kathy, I want to know about basically your first year on the job. It was so unique. There's so many things that you could pull out as learning experience or growth experience personally and league wise. This is incredible. Like, how do you sum it up in a couple of bullet points, what you went through?
Well, first of all, never thought when I, you know, knew I had a passion for the game and wanted to do something different than I had done for the prior 3 decades plus. And it obviously has been one of the most difficult years that any of us have ever experienced in live sports. But, you know, obviously from the pandemic and us playing a season in a single site and the enormous social unrest due to police brutality, racism, et cetera. So, you know, and not to have a season for our league, and you know this, Debbie, really well, like for a league of our size and scale would have been pretty existential, but it looked really bleak about a year ago, mid-March, that, you know, whether we're going to have a draft or we're going to have a season and, trajectory of the virus and then the George Floyd murder. So, but I do think when you're in a crisis is the one thing I could bring from my business experience is you have to turn challenges into opportunities. You have to find your spots. There's always challenges in a first year of leadership like I had. I never thought it would be this hard, but you know, we came out and we did some things to enhance the player experience. We signed the collective bargaining agreement. We did fan experience. We're working on the economics of the league. So, yeah, it's been quite a first year and a half. But I actually think we've taken some opportunity to actually get this league more recognition, broader brand, and hopefully when we can return fans safely at scale into our arenas, we can drive a broader fan base.
You seem like the absolute perfect match for what the WNBA needed at the right time based on your love for the game and experience and knowing the game, you know, to have somebody at the top that knows the game and knows how to play, so understands the competitive nature of coaches and players. But then it's your business acumen, it's your accounting and finance, and you are you're the freaking CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I don't know how else to say it. Like, it just seemed like how exciting for our game, for everyone that has some piece or part of having a an involvement in the league. You know, like how exciting was it for you? Because I know how exciting it was for other constituents outside.
Well, it was funny. A lot of people who didn't know my love for the game, if you came to my office, I always had basketballs in the background and sports in general, were kind of surprised, like, oh, we just thought Kathy would maybe retire or do boards or do, you know, another corporate job. And certainly those opportunities were there. But when I heard about this, and although I had to be convinced over a couple month period of time that, yeah, sports is a place where you want to work, having no idea what we would encounter over the past year and a half or so. But yeah, it was really just as you started, like, where'd your love for the game? And you know, just like to honor my father, who unfortunately died in 1987, a year after I was in my career at Deloitte. And so 30 plus years later, I've, you know, kind of thought, wow, what a great opportunity. And I, you know, with the five brothers too, when they heard about it, they thought it was like the coolest thing in the world. And, you know, and while it was great to be the CEO of a firm of 100,000 people, you know, pretty cool for my brothers and even my kids, like, oh, you're going to be the commissioner of the WNBA. So, but, you know, really, this is a transformation in process. Unfortunately, we hit the pandemic. We would be further along. We're going to get further along this year into next year when we can return to a little bit of normalcy. But, you know, I'm so pleased with the players, their platforms, what they stand for, the level play on the court. Like, I didn't know how great it was. It's great, as you know. And it's really tough to make this league, to make a team in this league. So couldn't be happier with, you know, as I see the support for women's sports evolving, the transformation that's underway, but still in pretty early stages. And we have a lot of hard work to do. Quite frankly, Debbie, not, and you know this because you do, you know, you follow all sports, like, women's sports is really hard, and it's hard to get the valuation right. And so my goal is to actually, using my business acumen, is to, you know, transform how women's sports is valued by sponsors, media, fans, because I know there's opportunity out there, and we just need to find a new way to value it so that we can have a different economic model that drives all the things that we did in our CBA, and I think other leagues are trying to catch up on.
So I know this is a podcast, but I wish people could see that I cannot just wipe the smile off my face. I mean, like, it is so thrilling and exciting to think about what the future can hold for the WNBA and the players. And I'm not trying to glance over the social injustice or the police brutality issues. Those are obviously important. And we have all learned a great deal this summer based on the incredible platform, the education, the activation, and all the things that the bubble allowed us to experience, well, not inside the bubble, but outside. But you hit on a couple of hot buttons for me. I think you're absolutely right about some of the economic growth that needs to take place. And, you know, I think women's sports is really hot right now, but I don't want to be bonus inventory anymore. I don't want us to be, we get this because they sold it to the men and we'll give you the women, and that's the way it works. I mean, I think our product alone is so good and stands on its own without all the other things that come with it, whether it's the emotional pieces of selling or the warm, fuzzy things that you get. I mean, I've been in sales and marketing and fundraising myself, so I know that we have a value. We have a very strong value. And I think your timing with your business background, with the height of in the climb, I should say trend, not the height, because I don't think we're there. We're trending in the right direction. Like, what's next? Like, what are
steps? I'm a big fan of data, and that's one thing I think that made me successful in my prior job is, you know, the facts will set you free, and the data will, you know, ultimately help you make decisions. And I mean, if you think about 85% of U.S. spending is controlled by women, and you look at 84% of sports fans surveyed are interested in women's sports, and popularity is growing, and then the U.S. Black population controls $1.4 trillion in U.S. spending power, and that's up close to 50% over the last less than a decade. And so you say, here's the WNBA, you know, a diverse league, it's probably the most diverse league in sports with women and our women, 80% women of color and LGBTQ+, and everything that these players have to offer. You know, I just think sponsors should be knocking down our door. Media partners should be knocking down our door. But there is, you know, a bias right now in society, you know, that doesn't value women's sports like it does men. You know, I see things that our women are doing that if that were the men's leagues, all men's leagues, all professional leagues, it would get so much more attention. They'd get so much more followers, the social media impact and views. So we have to find some qualitative ways to value women's sports that aren't just quantitative eyes on, because, you know, we're limited in that because our season's shorter, we have less games. But that's why one thing that's really important to me is, you know, to use the momentum coming off last season, build more of these players into household names, build rivalries, and make this something fans really want to watch. And even non-fans, draw them in through personalities, through storytelling, through, you know, player recognition. And we made a lot of progress in the last year on that, but we're still not where we need to be. But if all the statistics are right about, you know, our diverse league, then we should be able to drive a valuation model. But it's been a long discount, as you say, off of the men's game, and we've got to change that narrative. And I will not rest until I make progress on changing the valuation model.
Well, I 100% believe that. No doubt. I have 100% confidence, and a lot of people have a lot of confidence that that is exactly what you're going to do, Kathy. Speaking of those that do support, I keep looking at the Mark Davis situation out in Vegas, and I'm so grateful that here's a gentleman that has money, that understands the influence and power of women's sports, that attended the WNBA games in Vegas, so he was well aware of how good the product is. And then he decided to actually buy the Las Vegas Aces. And how exciting is that? And what kind of messaging comes out of that from a guy that owns an NFL franchise and all the other things that Mark Davis owns, and how his impact specifically in the Vegas market has been felt in sport?
Yeah, I think the Aces already have been such a success story since they moved. MGM was a wonderful team ownership group, but we're thrilled that Mark has shown that interest, as you said. And I didn't know that till last year or 2019 when I was 4 days on the job and went to the All-Star game. And they're like, Mark Davis. I go, isn't he the owner of the Raiders? And they're like, he's a huge WNBA fan and a huge Aces fan and you know, a huge women's college women's basketball fan. So, you know, Mark, I think, brings such a great background already. He's got lots of ideas. He's already looking at a practice facility out adjacent to where the Raiders practice and kind of giving the Aces their home. And obviously he's doing a lot in the Las Vegas community in addition to just owning sports teams. So we're thrilled to have Mark on board. And, you know, I really, he's going to bring, you know, especially leveraging the relationships that the Raiders have been building. Remember, they haven't been there that long. They haven't even played a game in front of fans yet in their new stadium. But, you know, really excited to see what he invests in. And I think it just validates that the WNBA is a league, you know, that people want to invest in, people are interested in, and we're really excited for Mark's ownership.
I don't know if you know the history, but listeners to this podcast will know how for more than a decade I've been campaigning for, you know, the Sweet 16 to Vegas on the women's side in college basketball, and not just Vegas, but really a destination city that would bring us all together. And I thought we learned a lot from the bubble in women's college basketball. And of course, due to the pandemic, we're forced to go to San Antonio this year for the Final Four and the entire tournament. But I want to specifically talk about Vegas because, you know, I think that's one of the great destinations. Obviously, the NBA found it with the Summer League, and there's lots of things going on in Vegas. It's in the 10 plus years that I've been talking about Vegas. And you need to know I'm not a gambler. I've never even bought a lottery ticket, Kathy. So my husband rolls the dice. I drink the drinks. We're perfectly fine when we go out there. But I'm just curious about, you know, what are some of the tentacles that Mark Davis has put out there in his messaging that might wake up some other people that are in sport that might have an inclination to take a peek at what we're doing?
Yeah, I think it is the fact that another major men's professional sports owner is interested in the WNBA and owning a franchise and building something big in Vegas and building a champion. In addition to, I mean, Vegas is such a known for, you know, obviously gaming, gambling. And, you know, that's one thing if we really want to expand our fan base, a lot of attention is going into sports betting now that many states are legalizing sports betting. So, you know, looking at what our consumers and fans want to engage with. And that's one of the areas I think that you know, having a team in Vegas and having an owner like Mark will be really helpful as we play out kind of a strategy around that as an adjacency to our platform as the WNBA. But, you know, I just think it's, and also leveraging corporate partners. Again, I mean, the Raiders have been around for a long time, much longer than our 25 years, which and so they're kind of an iconic team in sports, which Mark's father obviously built, you know, a championship team around. So, so you know, just looking forward to, again, all his ideas and innovation. And I mean, again, I'll tell you, just from my short time getting to know Mark, he's really going to help, I think, grow the game overall, not just in Vegas, not just for the Aces.
The other thing that's a wonderful jumping on point is the whole idea of sports betting and lines. And I know the NBA has worked to monetize sports gambling. And I think it's a big, huge area that is waiting to be captured on the women's side. In the WNBA, there were lines on every game this summer. And I personally followed them because I was interested. We all know that they do a phenomenal job with their algorithm or whatever they do to put the lines together, because it's like these guys are right on it. But I think if there's lines on the game and if people have an inclination to bet, then they'll pay attention. If they pay attention, they'll watch. If they watch, ratings will go up. If ratings go up, that gives us more inventory to sell. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, I see it as a step-by-step process. How do you feel about sports gambling and how it could bring more attention in a positive way to the WNBA?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Debbie. There's a lot of things like that that can set off kind of like a big attention drawer to the game. And we all know, because you see it in football with fantasy football, when women, for instance, who haven't been maybe big fans of the NFL get into fantasy football, then they watch the games and they become fans of the sport. So, you know, I'm, again, a studier of that kind of history, a studier of where the NBA, NFL, and others were 25 years in, 40 years in, now 75 and 100 years in, and the types of things that drove those brands and those franchises to huge value. And again, sports betting will be a component of that, but we first have to have, you know, build these household names, build these rivalries, and I think then people will be interested, whether it's betting or just watching the game. And also, one of the things we were able to do this past season was, because we didn't have fans in seats, is innovate with second screen experience. If you're trying to attract more of the younger fan and a digital native, they're always on their phone, whether they're in arena or at home watching. And what can you do on a second screen experience? So we had our Tap to Cheer app, where for the WNBA, I mean, we had 140 million taps during the season last year. In one game, I think there were over 4 million taps. It happened to be a regular season game between Vegas and Seattle, who ended up competing for the championship in the WNBA finals. But it's that kind of innovation that we're working really hard on, and our whole digital platform, of which sports betting would be one element of. But there's also kind of trivia. There's the things going on with, you know, monetizing highlight reels and things like that. So there's so much opportunity in the digital space more generally, and certainly sports betting is one of the pillars of that, but there's a lot of other things that we think can draw interest in the game, but also can be economically viable for us to invest in and then roll out.
I love the creative inventory, because I think we do have to think differently about how we present and message, and some of the opportunity for people to get involved in our game. And since you're so data driven, and you know, you're on top of that whole thing and evaluating all of that, I want to know about building star power. Like, we have a lot of stars in the league. There's a lot of really great players. And I'm just speaking about the product, because I know the other parts of it are important. But, you know, I always go product, place, promotion, and price. And we know the product has to be really good before the rest of it even can matter. And so we've got a great product in the WNBA. The players' skill set and athleticism and IQ and work ethic are really phenomenal. To sit in my chair and watch the game evolve since the inception, I did the ABL before the WNBA, so I've been a part of women's pro basketball in our country for 26 straight years. So it's phenomenal to me to watch the development of these players. But when you start talking, Kathy, about branding and star power and monetizing some of that, like, do you have a few ideas about how we can interact the star power with the fan, even more so than what you're doing?
Yeah, and it's a really good question. And one, it's first I'll say it's not easy. First of all, we need our partners and the whole ecosystem to partner with us on kind of some of the strategy behind how we value, again, women's sports, and then how that is, you know, how we then market. Like when I came in, I said, I went to the 12 cities and I said, you know, we have a sales and marketing issue. We need more capability. But we also need the whole ecosystem behind us on this. So I think, you know, one of the things we did off of the collective bargaining agreement, and quite frankly, because of the commitments we made to players in collective bargaining, those don't pay for themselves. So we launched something called WNBA Changemakers. And these are deeply invested partners who really want to drive change around supporting women and women's sports, and quite frankly, women in their companies and women in society and diversity and equity and inclusion. So I think, you know, we're, you know, tailoring benefits from the league and our players to match the goals of the organizations that hopefully will continue to support us. So that's one element of it. And then to the extent that those companies that join us have marketing power, using that within their four walls and outside their walls, and using kind of their marketing to drive more recognition of our players, what they stand for. And, you know, back to like how great it is on the court. I mean, we had in 2020, a record points per game. I think it was 83.1 or something like that. Record field goal shooting, 3-point shooting percentage. I mean, there's no question that the quality of play, the pace of play is at an all-time high. And so we need to sell that better. We need to market that better. So we just hired our first chief marketing officer of the WNBA, because my view was this is a capability issue that we need to drive, you know, as a core competency for us, and actually, you know, really benefit from that. So already Phil Cook, who came from, you know, over two decades at Nike, has already jumped in, because with our 25th season, with the Olympic team this year, the USAB women's team going for their 7th consecutive gold, you know, with we're trying to stand up a special competition this year called Commissioner's Cup. And so trying to build assets, drive interest in season, into the playoffs, while we take a break for the Olympics this year, are going to be a really important part of marketing. So the league. So lots of different things in addition to digital and sports betting and other adjacencies. And we will have a documentary coming out of the Wubble at some point. As well. So hopefully that'll drive some interest in our players in the game and in really what they accomplished on and off the court last season.
Everything you just said is very exciting for people that love the game and follow the game and understand the business aspect of the value these players can bring. So of the CBA, there's so many things in the CBA, right? And I'm not going to ask you to break it down, but from a layman's term or standpoint, you know, I don't even want to get into the technical, restricted, unrestricted, all the stuff that's in there. Just what are some of the really powerful messaging points from your perspective that you helped facilitate for the players in the CBA?
Well, number one, I came in 4 days in the job and was in my first CBA meeting in Vegas during the All-Star game weekend. And so kind of got up to speed very quickly on all the moving parts. And ultimately try to build some trust with the players over the summer into the playoffs, such that they would trust us, so that we were looking at a holistic list of things. I mean, there was a laundry list of probably 100 things that the players wanted. But, you know, obviously, as a league of our size and scale, you have to find the ones that are most impactful, most important. And the number one talking point for me is these are professional athletes, working women, who, you know, need to be treated with the type of benefits I was used to at Deloitte, my prior employer, which had a fabulous set of benefits, including family leave and family benefits and maternity, you know, broader family leave, not just maternity. So, you know, and so, you know, I used to talk about running a people first agenda. When you have 100,000 people, you've got to run a people first agenda. And when I came over to the WNBA, my first thought was, we need a very player first agenda. And so that's how the CBA then got negotiated and dealt with. And look, the owners of the WNBA, the 12 team owners, were so highly supportive, because I could have come in and they could have said, don't be bold. But they were like, be bold, Kathy. We have to build trust with the players so that they feel good about the league. They feel good about supporting the league, helping us market the league, that they want to be built into those household names and want to drive rivalries and want to perform on the court at the highest level. And so that's the biggest talking point, was these are working women and they should be treated as such. And you know, obviously they wanted more pay. We got that, you know. Obviously they wanted lots of benefits. We did the things that are really hard on them, you know, like travel, you know, as much as we could upgrade their travel experience, we will. And then, you know, what's interesting is we signed about a year ago, we signed the collective bargaining agreement, and 2 months, literally 60 days later, where the NBA shuts down and we're in this pandemic. And, you know, so that's when I say we were in the midst of a transformation plan. We got a little bit behind because of the pandemic, because we had to put the season on with all the health and safety protocols and testing, as you know, Debbie, because you were such a great part, not in the actual bubble, but watching from afar and commentating from afar on a lot of our, doing a lot of our games, and how challenging it was for those 92 days walking on eggshells every day that, you know, and I think what the team accomplished there and the sacrifice the players and coaching staffs made to be there. We've got to, again, take that and you know, capitalize on that momentum as we think about the player experience for next, this coming year, season, and beyond.
I was going to ask you about a couple of your pillars of leadership, because I think you've got a nice, interesting blend with what you said with people first agenda, with 100,000 employees at Deloitte. Like, that just blows my mind away. But also, I'm not going to ask you the balance about a working mom question, because I get that question all the time as well. And I always think that that's a question that's almost impossible to try to answer, because people don't really realize how challenging or tough it can be to try to have some sort of balance. So I don't think balance is the right word. I think rhythm is more the right word. But can you incorporate your working mom commissioner hat with your people first agenda into some sort of leadership inspirational message that we all can take from this?
Well, first of all, I do have two kids, but they're older now. So it gets a lot easier when they're older, 23 and 19. But you might see them in the background here. I know we're on a podcast, but they're walking back and forth because my daughters work from home. And my son is a remote college, and he actually goes to Lehigh. He's a sophomore.
Oh, cool.
At Lehigh. So he's but they're in remote if you're not a senior or freshman. So you know, the challenge is, I can't imagine, I know some of my team have young children and they're trying to balance it all from work from home during this pandemic, and it's really hard, really, really hard. So you know, what I tell them is, especially with trying to balance it all, as you said, and I always called it work-life integration. It was never balanced. It was always integrated. And I think that helped me be successful, you know, ultimately in my career, is that I learned how to integrate it. And I think, you know, as I talk with our WNBA players about their next phase, whether it's, you know, post-basketball, having a family, or, you know, building a career in business or in broadcasting, or, you know, in sports, you know, how important that is to me to help them with their development for their post-basketball career, because the average WNBA player, I think, plays in the league about 8 years. This was one of my first questions when I joined the league, and I said, okay, and they're mostly college graduates, so they're 30, and now what do they do for the next 30 plus years? So it's really important to me as a leader of this league, is I'm not just leading the league office, but also leading, hopefully, what these women will do and their contributions to society post. And obviously, we have amazing players like a Sue Bird, who's getting towards the end of her career. And then we have some amazing rookies and young players. So we have a great mix of stars. But it'll be important to me as a leader to ultimately invest in their development. And that's the player first angle that can't be written into a CBA, but is going to be really important, you know, goal of mine is to prepare these players for, and many of them are already entrepreneurs, and some of them are already mothers, and they're, you know, integrating it in. And certainly we saw the integration in the bubble with those that brought their kids, because we did allow moms to bring their children. You know, it's going to be really important to me that they see this as their career, but it's setting them up for a post-playing career, given the longevity of playing any professional sport for male or female. Is not as long as a career like I've had in business.
Well, we're just a short time from the draft, and we're a short time from the 25th anniversary season. 25 years of the WNBA doesn't seem like it's been around that long. 25 could seem like a long time. I don't feel like it has, maybe because I've aged along with the league. like the players have. But just your final thoughts about the 25th anniversary, Kathy, and what that will mean to celebrate some of the initiatives and some of the plans that you have prepared for this year.
Yeah, so we are so thrilled to be tipping off our 25th season. Like you said, draft just, you know, not too far away, you know, middle of April and the tip of the season a month later, and training camp starting after the Final Four of the women NCAA. So lots to go on over the next 60 to 90 days. And, you know, we've got a lot planned to, again, drive marketing the league to a broader set of fans, draw in new fans, build, again, these names of these players who have gotten some recognition, and huge, huge kudos to them for everything they stood for last year into this election cycle. And so we're excited to continue that momentum into this year, celebrate the 25th, both from a history, you know, you mentioned you were even part of the ABL, and then certainly the 1996 Olympics, if you think of it, are kind of was the birthplace coming out of that, where David Stern and others launched the WNBA the following year. So we're really excited about celebrating the beginning of this league, celebrating some of those legends. And we've started to engage those legends back with the league. You know, the Cheryl Swoops and Lisa Leslie and Cynthia Cooper and, you know, so many others, Fran Harris and Rebecca Lobo. And so celebrating them. But we also want this to be about the future that these players stand on the huge shoulders of those legends. But also they are themselves, you know, going to be providing such great role models for young boys and girls, and also role models for the future in what they endeavor to do after they're done playing basketball. So lots to unpack there. We could spend a whole nother podcast on that, but the 25th season is one to celebrate the history, but also to look forward to the future.
Well, you are welcome back anytime. Whenever you have 30 minutes and you have an issue or something you want to discuss, we are happy to entertain it. And if you've been following along with the college game this year, and I know you have, there's a lot of really good freshmen out there. So not to discount the great senior class we have, but man, the game's in good shape. We're going to be really excited moving forward.
Yeah, no, and thank you for all you do to promote and market the sport, and certainly your service to the sport, because it really is enormously helpful to have someone like you, Debbie, who knows the game so well and has such a passion for it. And it shows through in your broadcasting. So thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you, Kathy. We love having you on, and hopefully it'll warm up. You can get the sticks out and get some golf in before we start cranking it up.
Yes, before we tip our season in mid-May. So looking forward to it.